Very fitting that we sing, "How Can I, Lowly Mortal?" Because tonight we're going to look at the lowly and some other characters. In Proverbs chapter 11, in verse 2, we're told, "When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom." When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. This is a highly practical verse for us today. But instead of what my desire is in looking at this verse, is to consider how it fits in to our understanding of what the theological perspective is of this verse, how it fits into what we understand about God, what we understand about ourselves, and that would become a tool, a method that we can use to actually apply this to our own lives. We're not going to be able to look at all the possible ways that this can be applied, but probably we can handle that on our own, because if we're familiar with our own nature. So that's my desire. "When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom." Pride is a bad thing. Pride cometh before the fall. The word that is in this, that is behind this pride in the Old Testament, is actually not an inherently evil word. It's a word that means to rise up, to be raised, to be lifted up. And there are several times that it's actually used with reference to God. So let's look at a couple of those. And those will be very informative to our study tonight. First is Exodus chapter 15. Exodus chapter 15. This is just after God showed His incredible power over the Egyptians and rescued His people from power of the Egyptians and brought them through the Red Sea. And this is the song of Moses. And he says in this song, Exodus 15, verse 6 and 7, "Thy right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, hath dashed in pieces the enemy. And in the greatness of thine excellency," that's our word, "in the greatness of thine excellency, thou hast overthrown them that rose up against thee. Thou sentest forth thy wrath, which consumed them as stubble." So he says, there were those, the Egyptians, that rose up against thee. But you, God, you are actually excellent. You have risen up and you have overthrown them. You've overcome them. You've come on top of them, which he did literally with the Red Sea. Excellent. God describing the characteristic of his being high, of his being above. Excellency. And then also in Isaiah 24, verse 14. "Then, or they shall lift up their voice, they shall sing for the majesty of the Lord. They shall cry aloud from the sea." Majesty. That is a high term, isn't it? There's not many things that we would describe as majestic. But what would we describe as majestic? Something that is transcendent. Something that is beyond anything else that we could compare it to. a majestic sunset. It's just far and away better than any other sunset we've seen. Majestic. Well, these describe God, and this is the word. Majestic excellency describe God. So, of course, we know from the scriptures, the holy God, the creator of the universe, the one who is all-powerful, all-knowing, who created the whole, who created morality. He's the cause of all things. He defines what is good, what is excellent. So this is a very good way to describe him. He is lifted up. He is he's high. And he should be that in our hearts. He should be high in our hearts. But the scriptures also use this word many times, most of the time, to describe man. But consistently, it is translated pride. And we know that is not good. So, one example is while we're in Isaiah chapter 13, verse 11. And I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. Arrogancy, haughtiness, those suggest a highness, don't they? But it's a false highness. It's a misplaced highness. And so here, the proud, these people who have misplaced their elevation, they are proud. They should not be so. And a very interesting usage of this word is in Job. Wrong direction. In Job 38, God is just showing Job how high he is, just how powerful he is, and how not Job is. And he asks him all these rhetorical questions, which that he knows the answer to. Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest? So this is the spirit with which God is confronting Job here. And in verse 9 through 11, we'll read, when I made the cloud the garment thereof, and thick darkness a swaddling band for it, and break up for it my decreed place, and set bars and doors, and said, hitherto shalt thou come. He's speaking about the waters. Hitherto shalt thou come, but no further, and here shall thy proud waves be stayed. So he's not actually speaking about a man in this instance, but he's describing the waves. In your center column, it may say, the pride of thy waves. So here, God is describing these waves, which we know by nature are very unstable, not dependable as far as their height and their depth. These proud waves will be stayed by God. So by their very nature, they have this appearance of being mighty for a moment. But then inevitably, those waves will always come down. Every time. Have you ever seen a wave that did not come down? They are by nature going to come down. That's what a wave is. It goes up and it always comes back down. It goes up and it always comes back down. It's mesmerizing. So this illustration is very apt for our verse tonight. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. Just like the wave. In your pride, you are guaranteed to fall. Why? Because just like the wave, you have no foundation. You, in your pride, you are telling a falsehood. You are telling a lie. You're not in line with reality. Now, when God is proud, when God speaks of how high and lofty He is just in line with reality. What He says is reality. But when we have this profession about us that rises ourselves up like the wave, it is a lie, and it is doomed to fail. In fact, God will make sure that it fails. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. Now, there is a very interesting correlation, about seven verses we could go to, but we won't. We'll go to three of them that show that pride and lying go together. So let's start with Psalm 40. We're going to hit the ones in the Psalms, and that will make it more convenient for us. But there are many that show this relationship. Psalm 40, verse 4. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust, and respecteth not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. So there is a correlation here, a relationship here. The ones that are proud, the ones that we're trying to not look to, are telling lies. Psalm 119, verse 69. The proud have forged a lie against me, but I will keep thy precepts with my whole heart. And then down in verse 78, let the proud be ashamed, for they dealt perversely with me without a cause, but I will meditate in thy precepts. So here we have the proud being described, but he's being associated with this bad tendency to lie, to tell a falsehood. But really, that makes sense, because the very nature of man's pride, of man raising himself up, putting himself on a pedestal, is by nature a falsehood. There is none good, no, not one. But we would only know this if we understand our relationship with God. And then Luke 1:51. Luke 1:51. Mary's exaltation, she says about the Lord in 51, He hath showed strength with His arm. He hath scattered the proud in the imagination of their hearts. So here, the proud, what is so false about the proud? Their imagination of their hearts. It's just your imagination that you are so great, that you are so worthy of attention, that you are something to behold. It's your imagination. It's a falsehood. So there's a very strong correlation there. And, as we said, this pride is doomed to fail, and God will make sure it fails, because there's not room for God to be lifted up and for me to be lifted up. And God's going to win that battle, isn't He? Any nays there? All of you in favor? So Proverbs 16:18, the one we're probably most familiar with. Pride goeth before destruction, and an haughty spirit before the fall. Pride is doomed to fail. Proverbs 29:23. I recognize these are many scriptures. A man's pride shall bring him low. But honor shall uphold the humble in spirit, which we'll get to in a minute. And then lastly, Isaiah chapter 2. This is a very impressive chapter, which I cannot leave out, will not leave out. And here is a prophecy of the judgment of God. So in the first two verses, he says, the word that Isaiah the son of Amoz saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem, and it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it. Now we're going to skip down to where he starts to describe the judgment that he's going to bring. Verse 8. Their land also is full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. And the mean man boweth down, and the great man humbleth himself. Therefore forgive them not. Enter into the rock, and hide thee in the dust, for fear of the Lord, and for the glory of his majesty. That's our word. Now listen here, what God's about to do. The lofty looks of man shall be humbled, and the haughtiness of men shall be bowed down, and the Lord alone shall be exalted in that day. God is going to make sure that he will be the one who's raised up, the one that's exalted, the one that's majestic. Pride is guaranteed to fail. And the rest of that chapter is great, but we're not going to read it tonight. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. So what is the opposite of pride? This gets very exciting. What is the opposite of pride? Instead of being falsely, telling a falsehood and raising yourself up, it is telling the truth and bringing yourself low. Now, remember, we're talking about the big picture. We're talking about a big concept. So, humility or lowliness, as our verse says, with the lowly is wisdom. Let's read Isaiah 57. We just read a chapter that talked about how God is going to be the only one standing, if you will. There's only room enough for him. So because of that, what's the only way you're going to get to know God? Isaiah 57:15 tells us, for thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place. It's going to be hard to get there, isn't it? There's not going to be room for your ego. I dwell in the high and holy place with him also that is of a contrite and a humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. Now listen, not only will you be in the presence of the Lord with a humble spirit, but there is so much advantage to being humble before the Lord. He's going to revive you. And in our verse, with the lowly is wisdom. You will understand God. He will give you understanding in how to live well in a way that glorifies God. And if you're not doing that, what's the point? But it comes through a lowly heart. Well, this is interesting because who is the greatest example of humility? Jesus Christ. So let's look at Jesus Christ for a minute. Philippians chapter 2. We said a minute ago that it is only through understanding what our relationship with God looks like, as in, He is holy and I am dust. He is righteous and I am filthy rags. It is only when we understand that, when we believe it, that this becomes true. That we are humble before Him. But Jesus Christ, He didn't have that understanding of His relationship with God. So is it that the opposite of pride, humility, is that we understand our depravity, we understand how lowly we are before God? For us it is, but there's an essential element that I want to draw out here, because Jesus Christ was humble. But it wasn't because He said, "Oh God, I'm such a sinner. I bow before You." That wasn't why He bowed before God. Yet He was so humble. So in Philippians 2, we read "Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Let this mind be in you," this lowly mind, "let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus." He is our supreme example of a lowly mind. "Who, being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Wherefore, God also hath highly exalted him, and given him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee shall bow, of things in heaven, and things in earth, and things under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father." Jesus Christ became humble because, as He said through His whole life, "I came not to do mine own will, but the will of Him that sent me." He submitted to the authority of His Father, and in the context of His manhood, Jesus Christ, the man that walked on this earth, He was living a life that was submitted to God's authority, that was doing the will of the Father. He understood what that relationship was. He understood His purpose. He understood His calling. And His goal was to fulfill it. He had no personal motives. Of all the people in the world, who would be the most right to be proud, to draw attention to himself, to exalt yourself and say, "Hey, look at me"? But was Jesus Christ ever about His own business? Was He not always about His Father's business? So we, like Jesus Christ, we humble ourselves like Jesus Christ humbled Himself, submitting Himself to the reality of what His relationship was with God. For us, it is a little bit different in our natural state. We are sinners. We don't naturally have any standing before God. And only when we understand this, only when we believe it, when we live that reality of how low we really are, then we truly have humble hearts before God. Well, in James chapter 4, we see what this should look like in real life. James chapter 4. Do you desire to be like Jesus Christ in this way? He said, I will not quote this exactly correctly, but you know what it says. Take my yoke upon you. I am meek and lowly of heart. Jesus Christ, meek and lowly of heart. Of heart. Do you desire to take on that yoke? That easy yoke? Well, Jesus has showed us how to do that. Even though he was not a sinner. Even though he had every reason, from our standpoint, to raise himself up. James 4, verse 6. But he giveth more grace. Wherefore, he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Now that grace sounds really good, doesn't it? We need a lot of that. But it's the humble in heart that will receive grace. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Now, if God is lifting you up, you're not going to be like the wave. You will have a good foundation. What we just read in Philippians chapter 2, after all that humility and all that suffering, what did God do? He raised up Jesus Christ. He gave him glory and dominion over everything. That is a raising up that's worth having. It's going to last. Well, why would God be so interested in those who are humble, those who are humble in heart? Well, they look a lot like Jesus Christ. Think about this. Jesus Christ, as we already said, he resisted pride, period. He resisted showing off pride of himself, but he also resisted those who were proud. He just had none of it. He was not associated with this lifting up of himself. He was totally submitted to God, as we already said. He resisted the devil. And what happened? The devil fled from him. What did he appeal to? The authority of the Scriptures? The authority of God? He wasn't thinking about himself. He didn't think, wow, you're right, Satan. This would be a great kingdom. I would look really good at the top of that kingdom. He was submitting to God. He was submitting to the authority of God and what his role was on earth. And the devil fled from him. Draw nigh to God and he will draw nigh to you. Who was more intimately in fellowship with God than Jesus Christ? Hours in prayer, praying through the night, going off and seeming strange time, like, Jesus, you're leaving? And going off to pray with his Father. Draw nigh to God and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands. The supreme example of clean hands. Never an act that was dirty. Purify your hearts. A pure heart. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and He shall lift you up. So, we pursue being like Jesus Christ. That leads us to humility. That is what pursuing Jesus Christ looks like. It's not going to lift ourselves up. Because the more we know, the more we believe the truth of who God is and who we are and who we are through Jesus Christ, it glorifies God, it glorifies Jesus Christ. And we just stay way down here. So, with the lowly is wisdom. Why does wisdom come with the lowly? Because we're pursuing Jesus Christ. He is the way, the truth, the life. As we read, saw this morning. He is truth. He has the answers for your life. You're having some trials today? He's got the answers. He is the answer. Where does wisdom begin? The fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Well, that makes sense in our text. The fear of the Lord, a trembling, reverential fear, because we realize who this God is that we serve. And how right it is that I would be humble before Him. And how right it is that He would be proud, that He would be majestic and excellent. And it is that heart that God will fellowship with. The contrite heart. The humble heart. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. I have this little post-it note on my desk. I read it a lot the first week, and then sometimes I forget it's there. I'll have to go back and read it Monday. But my highest place is at the feet of Jesus. That is your highest place. Any other place you try to perch yourself on is not a good foundation. And God will make sure it fails. Because He's the one that will be high. I really want to look at a case study. And I will try to keep it expedient. But this really hits it home. Matthew 18. What is so important that we remember here is that it's not the external. It's not that we're introverts, or we don't talk a lot, or we don't say a lot to make fools of ourselves. That isn't humility. Thank you. That isn't humility in this way. It's the heart. It's the humble heart. You could be just as averse to attention, and that could actually be pride. Because you're still thinking about yourself. You say, I don't want that attention. Well, that's really pride. And those who are extroverts, who do like to talk to people a lot, they're not, by definition, proud by virtue of that fact. It's the heart that God's looking at. It's the heart that is deciding, that's the determining factor, if you are humble or if you are proud. So, we'll see this. Matthew 18. verse. Well, this is not the right place. I'm looking for the Pharisee and the publican. Thank you. Oh, I put Matthew, it's Luke, not, it is chapter 18, hopefully. Thank you for that. Yes, thank you. Verse 9, and he spake, now think about what we have, what we've learned tonight, and analyze this passage. And he spake this parable unto certain which trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up into the temple to pray, the one a Pharisee and the other a publican. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this publican. I fast twice in the week. I give tithes of all that I possess. How many I's were in that sentence? I mean, really? But if the shoe fits, wear it. And the publican, standing afar off, would not lift up so much as his eyes unto heaven, but smote upon his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, the sinner. What is this? This is a man who is proud. Man proud. He is raising himself up like nobody's business. But what did he do to have to do it, to get there? He had to tear someone else down. Because he didn't have a real foundation to raise himself up. He almost literally had to step on top of somebody to get higher. And that's what we do. I know I've done that. It's false. It's a lie. So he had to create a false something to stand on to get higher. And he hurt someone else, by the way. But the publican, he had real humility. This was not false humility, as we're about to read. This was the real deal. How do we know it was humility? He describes himself, the reality of his relationship before God. That he's a great sinner. That God is just untouchable. I cannot come before you. He had a better understanding of reality than this Pharisee did. And he begged God to be merciful to him. And I tell you, this man went down his house justified rather than the other. For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased. It's a promise. It's guaranteed. And he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom, and it doesn't get any better than fellowship with God. So I hope we will pursue humility this week. May God bless you.